This week on the Time Bat Show.
Harold's mom was raised in Costa Rica as a child, so they got like
a lineage for your turkey.
Yeah.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Time Bat Show, episode number 149. I'm one of your hosts, Timeasis.
I'm your other host, Bat Snacks.
And we've got a great show today, don't we, Bat Snacks?
We do. It's going to be fantastic.
It's the week after Halloween. We've officially reached the, would you say, the holiday season?
Or I would say, you know, the Christmas season.
Christmas season. They don't really waste any time anymore. You know what I mean? They're just like, the stores, I mean, they just go right into it. Like the Christmas season.
Yeah. I had a joke that I thought of earlier today. I wanted to like tweet out or like say to someone, man, don't you hate that they just skip over all the good Thanksgiving songs and go straight to Christmas?
Are there any Thanksgiving songs?
I don't think there are.
There should be, don't you think?
We should make one.
We should. There was an episode of King of the Hill. You know King of the Hill, right?
Yeah, it's the best show.
Where I'm pretty sure Bobby and Peggy try to write a Thanksgiving song, and it fails spectacularly. But we should write one, yeah, on the show. The problem is I'm a bad singer. You're a bad singer. We don't have any musical accompaniment right now. But, you know, we can make it work, I think. We need a topic. First, I mean, the topic is obviously Thanksgiving, but like, what is it? All Christmas songs have like a subtopic, right? So like, it's a Christmas, and like White Christmas is about
weather,
and then Chestnuts Roasting on the Open Fire is about chestnuts, you know, and then Jingle Bells is about bells. Deck the Halls is about decorations, you know. So what's our niche? Is it like turkey themed, maybe?
The first thing that comes to mind with that is that turkey might be, you might be putting people into like categories because not everybody eats turkey. You know, some people are vegetarian or whatever.
So maybe it just needs to be more generally about food, just like the feast. The song's called Feast, the Thanksgiving Miracle or something.
And it's about the miracle of coming together to make the feast.
To make the feast. And it's like, oh, every verse is like one of the family members and what they're doing to create part of the feast. So like, dad's in the den making ham. Mom's in the kitchen pruning some yams. You know, that kind of thing.
Little Becky's in the upstairs.
In upstairs, washing her hands, and Joey is stealing a turkey from the pan. I don't know, something like that. You know what I mean? It's like what every family member is doing in preparation of the feast. You know.
Then they all put it on the table, and they eat it, and that's the song.
Put it on the table, say little prayer. Everyone goes around and eats and grabs a piece of... See, I can't rhyme anymore.
Hair.
They grab a piece of hair from the person to the left of them and, like, each of them do it. Because this song is establishing a new Thanksgiving tradition, too. Because that's the thing about Christmas songs. Like, nobody roasted chestnuts on the open fire before the song came out.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. No one does
so
that.
If we put the hair thing into the song... Then maybe people will start doing that for Thanksgiving.
That's a good idea.
The table, grab a piece of hair, use it as a toothpick, and then throw it in the air.
It's perfect. It's non-denominational. Anyone can do this just about, you know, as long as you have hair.
Yep. Well, yeah, as long as you have hair somewhere, and you have some kind of food, and you have a table with family members. I mean, we really just wrote it in like 2 minutes. That was perfect. You know, and then, I mean, you can have another verse about like them leaving or something, but that's not as fun, I feel like. I feel like the short and sweet kind of thing is best. It almost sounds like a limerick, but it's fine. So,
Yeah, it doesn't need to be very good. Like,
no. No, going by what Christmas songs do, you know, they're not very good. A lot of them aren't very good. But yeah, I like that. I don't remember anything now. It was dad's in the study making the ham, mom's in the kitchen pruning some yams.
Some yams.
Becky's upstairs washing her hands. Little Jimmy's stealing a piece of turkey from the pan. They all come sit to the table
and grab a piece of hair.
Grab a piece of hair, use it as a toothpick, and throw it in the air.
That's awesome.
That's it.
It works.
That's the song. And it's called the Thanksgiving Day Miracle Feast, right? Or what was it? I don't know. Miracle of the...
of hair.
Yes. This is establishing a new tradition. So, are you excited for Thanksgiving? Do you like Thanksgiving or no?
I love Thanksgiving. It's better than Christmas. It's like all the good things about Christmas without the pressure of Christmas.
Yeah. I feel like as you grow up as an adult, like, Christmas is less cool. Because... yeah. You can buy yourself gifts anytime you want. You know, you don't have to wait for Christmas, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, what does Christmas really have on you as an adult? Like, all it is you have to stress about what you're going to buy for everyone on Christmas. Like, that's what Christmas is as an adult, you know? Yeah. As a kid, it's just you're getting things. As an adult, it's like, what am I going to get for Aunt whatever her face is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to, like, see everybody, too. Like, that's a fun part of Christmas. But, like, I don't know. That's a lot of pressure in and of itself, too.
Yeah, but you can see everyone for Thanksgiving, too, if you
want. Yeah. Which is, and you don't have to buy them things for whatever reason. I don't know why you do it with there and not the other place.
Well, it's because, I don't know. I think because, I really don't know the answer to that. I feel like we have enough gift holidays already. We don't need any more. So if someone created, like, a gift Thanksgiving, that would just be overkill. That's just me, though. You know. But, yeah, I like Thanksgiving. Do you guys do turkey, or what do you do? Like, what's your go-to meat? Yeah.
We do turkey with stuffing. Those are the two big entrees.
Mm-hmm. I love stuffing.
Yeah, the stuffing we make is super good. My mom and my grandma make it with, like, all the organ meat and stuff, so it tastes, really irony and, like, rich.
Really good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love stuffing. I don't want to think about what's in stuffing whenever I eat it. I just know it's really good. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the sausage of the Thanksgiving world, if you know what I mean. Like, there's just stuff in there. Not really sure how it's made. But it's in there. Like, I'm pretty sure you use, like, the trimmings, which, in and of itself, that's a weird word, right? Like, use the trimmings of the turkey as part of the stuffing. It's like, what does that mean? Like, is that the discarded parts that no one wants to eat?
It's the stuff you don't eat.
It's like, okay. It's a very, like, nice way to say the, like, the throwaways. You know, like, use the trimmings instead of, like, use the crap that no one wants to eat during the turkey. And then you, like, you take the juices that it, like, excreted out during cooking, and you, like, put it in there somehow, too. You know, it's very similar to gravy. It's kind of gross, but it's so good.
Stuffing. It's one of my favorite foods. It's probably my favorite holiday food by far.
Love stuffing. My mom makes stuffing. It's really good, too. And I just, like, I can't wait to eat it. Like, I can't wait. I want it right now. Like, thinking about it. The good thing about stuffing, too, as everyone says this about the turkey and Thanksgiving, because I don't know about your stuffing, but the turkey and Thanksgiving, everyone's like, oh, it's great because you can have turkey for like a week. You know, you have a lot of turkey. And like, okay, that's fine. But the stuffing, I eat that cold for like 4 days straight because it's so good. You know what I mean? It gets a little gelatinous and like fatty, but like, I don't care. It's so good.
It's perfectly fine.
It doesn't even matter. But I like think about that. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna have cold stuffing for lunch tomorrow. Yeah. And it's good. So
I'm gonna like eat so many carbs and get like horrible heartburn and like feel lethargic.
Yeah, like you'll want to take a nap all day, but it'll be worth it because the stuffing is so good.
Yeah.
I don't know. So are you doing anything for Thanksgiving? You just have it, you're just doing family stuff?
Yeah, I'll just see my family.
My family's coming into town to see me for Thanksgiving, which doesn't happen very often. Normally I go to see them, but this year, they're coming over here.
So you know what that means.
What does that mean?
you have to host Thanksgiving.
I know.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure, dude.
It is a lot of pressure. I don't know what I'm going to do.
You have to make turkey. You have to do
it. No, I don't think I have to do it.
I think you do.
I think my mom and my wife have to do it. Sounds so bad, but it's true.
You kind of have to as well. I mean, it's going to happen in your house.
No, so. You're right. We reserved a turkey online. You could do that now. Did you know that? Like, you pre-order a turkey, like a video game.
It's like Fandango for, like...
Yes.
For turkeys. Because the store near our house, like, they have really good turkeys, but they sell out really fast. Yeah. So we're like, we got to get a good one. So we, like, pre-ordered a turkey online, which is a very weird concept to me, but...
Do they email you, like, a concert ticket? Like, you... Or, like... You know, you have like a boarding pass you get in your inbox.
Yeah,
or something.
You get like a voucher and then you bring it and then you're like, here's my turkey ticket. And they're like, here's your turkey. You know what I mean?
It's a good idea.
So, I mean, they do that. And I don't, here's the weird thing. I don't know if you can know how much it's going to cost because the turkeys are cost by weight. So right. Like you just order like within the bounds of like, do I want a small, medium, or large turkey? You know what I mean? And then they're like, okay, large turkey is between this pounds. And then whatever you get, you have to pay for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you get to claim which you have a turkey up for grabs, essentially. So
yeah, that's smart. That way, you know, they don't have to keep track of, oh, this exact turkey is for this exact person.
This is Bob's turkey.
You know what you could do? You know how, I don't know, this isn't a very good parallel, but you know when you send money to the people that save animals and they send you back like a picture of the animal
that
saved?
You saved, yeah, like the Humane Society or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, like Winn-Dixie or wherever. I don't think they have those in Texas, but wherever you order your turkey... They could send you a picture of your exact turkey. It could have, like, a name.
You would have to pre-order this really far ahead of time, I think, though.
But you could charge a premium for this, because, you know...
So it's, like, 3 months early, and you're, like... You look on the internet, and you're browsing pictures of live turkeys.
Yeah.
And you're, like, I want that one. He looks good.
And they should have names too, like cars. They have they should have designations. Like this is the what would it be? The Drumette DX300.
Sure. This is the Deluxe Aerofill 3000. You know, or whatever. Yeah. And then they can have like subspecies and stuff. Like Harold's mom was raised in Costa Rica as a child, so they get like
a lineage for your turkey.
Yeah.
So it's like they get a little spice in there when you eat them.
People would do this if it like named the farm you got it at. If the turkeys were treated good.
Yeah. See? And they could like, you could have like a little video feed, not of your turkey, but of like the farm. So you could like see the turkeys like free range out there and not being in cages and stuff. You know.
You take a step further. You could have a video of your turkey.
There's like a webcam at all times to see your turkey to like make sure he's the right one for you.
Yeah.
This is like really expensive though because you get like full reign over your turkey. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, you think you could choose his diet before he gets slaughtered too?
I was just thinking about that.
We're on the same page here, aren't we?
Not only can you... I mean, you know how when you're ordering a sub online, you can check, like, I want green peppers, mushrooms, give me some mayo.
Yes.
You would have, like tiers of turkey feed, and then you could give them, like, treats, like beer, and because that relaxes them or something.
I wish, okay, so you have, like, the webcam, right? You know, like, those games that you used to play, like, Tamagotchi, where you, like, click it, and then it, like, gives them the food? On the webcam, I wish it was automated, so you could, like, give them a treat, and then it pops out of the camera, like, live, and so you could see the turkey, like, eating the treat you just gave him.
Getting really happy about the treat he has.
Yeah, and he's like, oh. And then it has, like, a thing on the bottom, it's like, the more you give the turkey treats, the tastier it'll be, and it's, like, $2 per treat or something like that.
Yeah, dude, microtransactions.
Yep.
And then you, and you, at the end of it, you get a turkey. And then they have, like, an out for, like, if you grow too attached to your turkey, you don't slaughter him. Like, you can, like, pay them $100 extra to not slaughter your the turkey that you've grown acquainted to.
This could be the whole secret of the business. The idea is that you get people attached to the turkey that they're going to eat for Thanksgiving. And I think most people would buy out or something. Like, no, I've
grown with this. At the end of the thing?
Yeah, I've grown with this turkey. Just let him loose in the field.
$500. Because otherwise, they're just going to give them to somebody else.
Yeah. Make it exorbitantly expensive. Like,
and this is how they keep their turkeys. Like, they raise more. It's like, okay, we're not going to kill this one. We're just going to use him for breeding now because someone's paid $500 to save his life or whatever.
For it's some like reason.
It's like the presidential pardon. Like, he pardons a turkey every Thanksgiving, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what is he pardoning it for? The turkey didn't do anything wrong. It existed is what it did wrong. But I think this is a decent idea. The turkey cam, you know?
Yeah.
Turkey, I don't know what the name of the business would be.
Turkey cam, I think, works.
Turkey cam. But, I mean, our generation would be into this. And I don't think any other generation would, but our generation definitely would be. You know, like our specific millennial, we like organic food and like we know, like knowing where our food came from and stuff. Like that is this tenfold.
Yeah. You know? We like a story more than anything else that we can share.
And this provides a story.
This
and
is you're every, all yeah, kind every, of story.
And every turkey gets like a backstory, you know, like what their mom and dad were up to. What, you know, like interests and stuff. We just make this stuff up, but like, you know, this turkey enjoys basking in the sun on sunny days, you know, or this turkey enjoys exercising out in the field or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just everything has a little bit of a backstory. Just explain a little.
It gives you something to talk about at Thanksgiving so that you don't have to spend time on, like, politics or whatever.
Yeah, so when you're eating the turkey and your, you know, your aunt goes, this is great turkey, where'd you get it? You can just talk about the turkey for, like, 2 hours. Yeah,
I can talk about this first.
It's like, oh, this is Jeremy. I've had him, I've been working on him for 3 months now, and, you know, I was going to do the low-tier feed, but I decided Jeremy needs the best, so I upgraded to the $100 feed, you know, or whatever, and I gave him a lot of treats, and I swapped his diet out for meat and vegetables at the end of the month or something like that, you know, to really fatten him up more. Turkey camp. Yeah.
When I was a kid, and I used to play Pokemon on my regular Game Boy that was black and white, I always felt bad for the Pokemon that they had to exist in black and white. And I thought that if I bought a Game Boy Color, that it would, like, make the game color for some reason and all the Pokemon would be happier.
Shit, yeah.
Like, this is, like, really what was going on in my mind. And I remember buying my Game Boy Color and I put in the regular Pokemon in. It was still in black and white and I was, like, crushed. Oh, no. I was like, oh my God, they're miserable. They're caught in black and white hell.
Wasn't there a way to make black and white Game Boy games colored anyway in, like, Game Boy Color? Like, you could, like, set something to make it colorful or something like that.
I don't think there was.
Maybe not. I might be thinking of Pokemon Yellow, which I think was a Game Boy Color version.
Yeah, this was, like, Red and Blue.
Yeah. I'm sorry your Pokemon were black and white, even on Game Boy Color.
Yeah. It's the same kind of psychology, though. Like, you get something and you want to do better for it.
Yeah. There were so many iterations of Pokemon back then. Do you remember that? Like, how old were you when Pokemon came out? 1996 or 7, right, is when it came out, I want to say.
Yeah, middle school.
So I was like 9 years old or so. And that was like the perfect age to get completely sucked into that, like, really good, you know? Yeah. Like, they had the show and the games and the movies and the trading cards and did we ever play Pokemon at the same time? I don't remember. I think we met older than that.
Yeah, we were in between. I lived in Georgia when Pokemon came out, and I got really into it. I think by the time I moved back to Florida, it had, I was too cool for Pokemon.
You were too old. Yeah, you were like 5th or 6th grade at that point. You're like, I don't need Pokemon.
That's when you pick up a man's game, like Magic the Gathering.
Yes, which is exactly what we did.
Yeah.
Do you remember trying to learn that for, like, 2 years? Do you remember that? Like, we tried to learn Magic the Gathering together when we were teenagers, and we didn't understand the rules, like, at all. And we, like, played it wrong for, like, a year, I want to say. Because I had, like, the stupid starter set. Do you remember this?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And then only later did we realize how poorly we were playing. But I don't remember how we figured out what we were doing is wrong.
I think we tried to play other people, and they were like,
and they're like, you can't. No, that's not the way it works. Learning a new game with someone that doesn't know how the game works is, like, really cool, but it also can be really dangerous because you can both, like, reinforce the wrong way to play the game together. Like, when we learned Magic together, you know, one of us would be like, oh, I think this is how it works. And I'm like, yeah, that must be it. And then we just sort of, like, reinforced the completely wrong thing. Like, remember when we were learning how to play Go when you were over here, like, a month back?
Yeah.
Like, part of me thinks that, like, we found all these, like, strategies while we were playing. But, like, in the back of my mind, I was like, we're probably doing something wrong and, like, just solidifying this incorrect way of playing Go, you know what I mean, together or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day when we were learning Magic, you didn't have the internet to learn the correct way.
That's true.
But with Go, even though you have the internet, everything written about that game is a mystery.
Like, it is. Like, learning about it, like, reading, like, the Wikipedia page, it's like, it's so simple. It should only be, like, a couple rules long. But every page all has, like, theory on, like, they mix the theory and the rules together whenever they talk about Go. And that, like, really annoys me as, like, a person that wants to learn how a game works.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't know what the important part to read is. So, like, that Go book, I never shared this on the podcast, but when we were learning Go, it came with a little book of, like, how to play Go. And the first page was, like, 2,000 years ago, when the Chinese emperor blah, blah, blah was learning how to play, or was learning how to make a military victory, his forefather handed down the game of Go to try to understand the concepts of philosophy and military science. And, like, it, like, rambled on about, like,
it's like, come on, man, this isn't, let's, can we just, like, get the rules?
It's like, what is this? And, like, I flip ahead and it's, like, more rambling, but, like, the rules are probably hidden in this giant paragraph. And I'm like, at that point, I'm like, let's just play and we'll figure it out, yeah. You know? But I don't know. That's, like, all of Go. It's like all the rules are like, all the explanations online are like that. So, like, I wish I could just get the rules. Like, just no fluff. Just here are the rules. If you're confused about the rules, refer to a separate page. But, like, don't mix those together. You know, don't mix the theory and the rules at the same time. It just confuses me.
Would you like to do a trivia question?
I would love to do a trivia question.
Okay. You have Halloween trivia this week.
Woo! Leftover from last week, right?
Okay. You ready? Your first question's about Halloween movies.
Oh, okay. I'm excited. Lifeline, I want to do 50-50.
Okay. Question is, what was Universal Pictures' first feature-length film?
Universal Pictures. Okay.
First feature-length film. Is it A, Frankenstein in 1910? Is it B, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in 1912? Is it C, Traffic in Souls, 1913? Or is it D, Nosferatu in 1922?
This is the first movie Universal Pictures made.
Feature length, yeah. Feature. And these are all real feature length movies.
And the dates are all right, too, I'm guessing. Okay. So, I feel like it's Frankenstein, because that, I know that's a universal thing, but I feel like 1910 is really early for that. Like, I'm almost wondering if there's, like, two different versions. Like, there's one by another studio in 1910, and then Universal did their own version later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So that's why I'm kind of leaning away from that. But I'll use my 50-50. Might as well.
Okay. It is either Frankenstein in 1910... or is it C, Traffic in Souls in 1913?
Damn it. You just gave me the one I said I thought it was. I mean, I'll go with my gut then, because my gut was Frankenstein, but I felt like it was too early. But I'm going to go with Frankenstein, final answer.
Frankenstein is incorrect.
Oh, it's Traffic in Souls, really?
Yeah, and I've never even heard of that. I don't know what it is.
Either. I don't know what it is. I want to look it up. Is it even a Halloween, like a scary movie or whatever?
I don't know. It might not be. It sounded spooky. I mean,
it says Souls in the title, yeah. So it's probably scary. That's weird. It's weird that Universal Pictures' first movie is something we've never, ever heard of before. You know what I mean?
You'd think they'd remake the hell out of that instead of whatever we do.
Maybe it wasn't very successful, which is weird because Universal Pictures is successful now. But I don't know. Maybe you can't win the first time, I guess, right?
Or maybe it was like, maybe it dealt with some weird political stuff that wouldn't fly today.
That wouldn't work today. Have you ever thought about that with movies and like books and stuff? Like, some movies are like so stuck in their time period that I don't think they could ever get remade today. This is completely off topic, but like, I don't know why I was thinking about this yesterday, but I was thinking about the movie You've Got Mail. Have you ever seen that movie? With Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks? Okay, so it's a romantic comedy that takes place in the late 90s at the height of AOL's power over, everything. So these two pen pals talk on AOL, Instant Messenger, and on AOL email. And that's how they, like, meet and fall in love or whatever, right? And long story short is, like, they don't know each other in real life. And in real life, they do know each other, but they hate each other. But they don't know they're, like, the same pen pals as the ones on AOL. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, anyway, the point is, it was like, if you weren't alive in 1997 or whatever when this movie came out, you would have no idea what's going on because it's like half the movie is spent in like AOL chat rooms and using the AOL mail system, you know, with You've Got Mail and stuff like that. So like you would have no context of like most of the movie's plot if you didn't live during that era. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think maybe young people could because have you seen that show Catfish?
Huh, yeah.
The whole premise of that show is that people form relationships on the internet without knowing who the real person is. And sometimes it's not who they think it is, but they don't know that because they only communicate in text form. There's no pictures or any of that. That's kind of the same as You've Got Mail. Like,
that's true. The technology is different, though.
They're talking to each other online and they don't know the real person. Actually know each other.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, like, the technology is different. I think people could probably figure it out, but it would be, like, a weird thing to, like... It would be a weird movie to watch in, like, 30 years, because people that are watching it would be like, why is everyone obsessed with this AOL thing? Like, I don't get this. You know, like, because it's, like, the whole movie. Like, everyone talking about AOL, like, all the time. And, like, looking back even now, it's like, who cares? You know, but, like... In, like, 30 years from now, I'd be like, why are they even on it? Like, who cares about AOL? Like, it's so weird, you know?
When that came out, that was probably, like, so high-tech. The fact that they had like, all the sounds that the browser would make
in it, too. Yeah, and people that watched it in 1997 are like, oh, this is exactly what I do on my computer. But people watch it today and be like, why are they so obsessed with this? Like, they talk about AOL in the movie, like, all the time. Like, they're like, oh, and I was in a chat room and da-da-da. And they're talking about all this, like, specific 1997 AOL, you know, stuff that, like, yeah, you'd get today, but you wouldn't really get why they're all obsessed with that. And it'd just be, like, a random, weird, you know, thing. I don't know. It's just one of those movies that, like, I like the movie. I just feel like if you watch it, like, much later, it's going to be like, this is so in its own time period that it's hard to even understand. Like, this is going to be a really terrible example, but, like, you know when you read Shakespeare in high school?
Yeah.
And the teacher has to explain, like, what all the things mean in the context of the time that Shakespeare was written?
Yeah.
It's like that.
So what you're saying is, in about 400 years,
yes,
they're going to be teaching You've Got Mail in school.
And the teacher's going to be like, now AOL was an internet platform that allowed people to communicate instantaneously through text messages. Yeah.
They're going to have to learn the ancient technology, too. Like, they communicated over something called markup transmit protocol. Hypertext
markup language. And they're going to, like, hand out, like, replicas of laptops. And, like, you'll have, like, this keyboard. And they'll, like, it'll be, like, a group project. And, like, now pretend to write to Joey on your laptop. And the kids will be like, what the hell is this monstrosity? Because, you know, they like to give props to the kids to make it.
Yeah, understand. It's more immersive. It's like having swords in Romeo and Juliet and whatever.
Exactly. So yeah, I think we'll be teaching You've Got Mail in 400 years. It's definitely a high class movie.
Do you know what would be wild? So if you get far enough in the future, the accuracy of what actually happened in You've Got Mail, because by now, like, it's not been preserved. It's like the Dead Sea Scrolls. Only like tattered clips remain. And it's more of a legend as to what this movie was originally.
Because no one understands the technology anymore. Yeah. And they're like, what does this mean?
No one understands what they're saying, too. It doesn't make any sense to someone like 2,000 years in the future.
But especially You've Got Mail, because it's so in its own time period, too. Yeah.
So what you've got to do is just create like what you think is going on in the movie. And it'll be so completely different from what is actually happening.
Maybe that's why it'll be revered in 400 years.
Yeah.
Because no one will really know what's going on, so they'll, like, interpret it in this really philosophical and interesting thematic way, and it's, like, not that at all. Because it's just a movie about two people using the internet to talk to each other. Oh, God.
That would be really funny. Yeah, do you ever think about that with art? Like, maybe we didn't get the good ones.
I mean, yeah, I've thought about that before. Like, how do we know? We have no idea, and we're looking at it through the lens of history, right? And who knows, like, what other stuff was around that we just didn't see because it didn't get preserved correctly.
Or maybe our idea of why something is good is flawed. Like, maybe we're just embellishing too much because, you know, we don't know enough about it, and our idea of what it is way cooler than...
Yeah, and I think we, like, graft our own opinions and themes on things that we like. Like, if you I have this with, like, some music sometimes. Like, I'll listen to a song, and, like, one day I'll be like, oh, that was okay. And then, like, I'll listen to it again, like, years later, and be like, wow, that was amazing. And maybe it was because, like, my headspace in that specific moment was, like, good to be receptive to it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what we do with, like, art sometimes, and maybe that's what happened to some historians who decided that this was worthwhile to preserve, you know, and they just didn't do that with some other things that maybe were worthwhile too, which is interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Speaking of social networks, though.
Oh, I can't wait.
Do you want to talk about this new one that I joined?
I would love to talk about it because I am completely and utterly fascinated by whatever the hell this is.
So this week, I got the idea that I wanted to submit something to a magazine, like an online magazine.
Okay.
And I figured out that the submission process is they accept whatever you made on this app called Keybase.
Okay. And what is getting out to all? What's Keybase?
It's this social networking app that supposedly encrypts all communications, so it's secure or something.
It's secure or something.
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
Okay.
But their whole when I went to their website to see what it was all about, it was all like, you know, government can't intercept your messages or whatever. Not even we can intercept your messages. They're all encrypted. We don't store them anywhere.
Does it use the blockchain?
It does. It also uses the cloud and the Internet of Things. It's got all of them.
It's got everything.
Yeah.
It's got all the buzzwords. Okay, so you signed up.
So I signed up, and when I put this thing on my phone, I noticed when I opened the app, there's like a crypto coin wallet that's part of it. Like, I opened up the wallet part of the app, and it's like, you have $0. Would you like to buy some Stellar Lumens? That's what they were called.
Did you buy some?
No, I didn't buy any Stellar Lumens.
Do you need to buy the Stellar Lumens to submit your paper to the thing?
I haven't figured it out yet, but I have
is that a feeling you do?
Yeah.
Why does this publication use this crappy social media thing to submit papers?
I think the idea is that the stuff that you send in will be kept anonymous because the magazine anonymizes all the submissions so that you can't know who submitted what.
You could do that in a much cleaner way than do this weird social media site, though.
Email, for example.
Right. Like anything, any form on the internet, really. Like, It's not that hard. And, like, even if you're worried about, like, oh, a form could be hacked, do you really care about your stuff? Like, a hacker? Do you think a hacker's going to spend time to, like, be like, I really like this short story. I'm going to hack their Google form to figure out who wrote it. Like, at that point, great. Who cares? It's not going to, like, do anything to you. It's not like you're putting your credit card information in this thing or anything, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's weird. But so the weird part about the app is when it's open on my phone gets really hot. So something is happening when this app is open. And
it's probably go ahead.
I have a theory.
Okay.
I think when you have the app open, it's mining its own coin.
I was about to say that. Yeah, I bet it's mining Bitcoin. It's using your phone as a Bitcoin miner.
Yeah.
Which is really bad, by the way.
Yeah, incidentally, they allow you to buy Stellar Lumens with Bitcoin.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
So do you think this is like a, I'm not going to say conspiracy, but this is like a scam kind of thing?
I don't know if it's a scam because, like, what if everybody that does this just knows that this is happening to them, you know?
Like the Bitcoin mining thing?
Yeah, like maybe they're just cool with it. The people that use this.
You didn't agree to mining Bitcoin with your phone, though, did you?
No.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be cool with it. It's weird that, like, a third-party website is asking you to use this other third-party app to submit your paper. Like, what is the thing that you're trying to submit? You don't have to give the name, but, like, is it, like, an online publication or whatever?
Yeah, it's an online, like, science fiction magazine.
And they're like, use Keybase to submit your story, basically.
Yeah.
Just so weird. Is this like a poetry.com thing where...
No.
Okay. Back in the 2000s, you could submit poems to the site. I think it was poetry.com. And you'd submit poems to the site and to get published or whatever. And then they would mail you. Like, real mail, a letter that was like, your poem was amazing. I loved it. It was so good. You can buy a hardbound copy of a book of poetry with your poem in it for the low, low price of $29.99. And it's just all about you thinking that you've gotten published, but in reality, it's just a bunch of people thinking they got published and them charging you to get a copy of a book with your poem in it. You know what I mean?
That's a brilliant scheme. I've never heard of that.
So this Keybase short story thing almost sounds like you got to use Keybase, and in doing so, you're like paying them some kind of money somehow or getting Bitcoin, and they don't really care about the publication. They just care about you mining coin for them while you're trying to figure out how to submit this paper to you, to them. You know what I mean?
That would be a really brilliant incentive for groups. So it isn't that, because the magazine is free on the internet. No one makes any money. But think about this. What if the reason they use Keybase is because if you create a group on Keybase, maybe you get to keep the coins that the people in your group mine.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a cool business
model? So if you invite someone to your group, like this literary group,
right?
And they're like, all right, use this to submit your thing, the group gets that, the stuff you've mined.
With your phone.
In the group, yeah. That's cool.
So it incentivizes like big groups to host their communicating on this app, right? Because they get money for doing it.
That's actually kind of cool. I mean, it's not
a great idea.
Ethical, I don't think. But, you know, it's cool. It's a good idea. The thing about this stuff is every time we talk about this, I think of, like, new ways you could improve upon the scheme, you know what I mean? And, like, make more money, like we both do. And then I think of, like, oh, man, I'm in the wrong line of work. Like, I would be so good at this stuff. Yeah. But, like, I don't want to do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what this made me think of is, you know, Facebook is making its own crypto coin.
Are they? Facecoin?
Yeah, Zuckerbuck. I don't know what they're going to call it. But
I like Facecoin.
Facecoin is
funny. It has Zuckerberg's face on it, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, they're trying to make one. They're having a lot of problems politically with it because obviously that would like destroy banks or could.
Oh, I guess that's true.
But like if Facebook did this And they did what we were saying, where, okay, the KFC group, everybody in the KFC group is mining coins for KFC. KFC gets all that Bitcoin, gets to keep it. Like, it would incentivize everyone to only use Facebook.
That's true, because they would be able to get... This is like some China, you know, internet level, like China communism dictatorship level, like, stuff, though. Like, now we're playing, like, inside baseball with, like, capitalism. Like, even more than we already are, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? Like, it's really creepy. Because then Facebook is their own economy that they control, basically, at that point. Which is super disturbing. Yeah. But they could do it. They could totally do it. And we can tell you how, Facebook. So I just need a salary of $500,000 a year. And you, I would assume, want similar, and we'll get it done for you, right?
I'll do it for half that.
Oh, half? Yeah, I'll do it for $250. Contact at timebatshow.com or tweet at us. Yeah, we don't have a Facebook page, but you know, it's fine. Should we do another trivia?
Sure.
I don't know why I called it triv.
Some slang.
Slanging it up.
All right. This isn't a good trivia question. We have, like, the bad Halloween questions.
Bad trivia. No, I love the bad trivia. Bad trivia is some of my favorite moments of this whole show.
All right. This one's about geography, I guess.
All right. You guess.
What lifeline do you want?
It's geography, you guess.
More like culture. It's about culture.
I'm gonna use 5-second Google.
Okay.
Just because I feel like it.
That's a good choice. Question is, what does Hong Kong's Lui Yang mean? Lu Yan.
Okay.
I said it different both times.
You said it two different twice in a row.
I think it's Lu Yan.
How do you spell it?
Lue Yan.
Yeah, Lu Yan, I think.
Okay.
And if we're wrong, please correct us. So what does Hong Kong's Lu Yan mean?
Is it A, the Festival of the Forest Demons?
Okay.
Is it B, the Festival of the Hungry Ghosts? Okay. Is it C, the Festival of the Lonely Spirits?
Ooh.
Or is it D, the Festival of the Wailing Man?
I hope it's one of the last two, because those are the most fun.
Yeah.
The Wailing Man Festival. There's just like a man tied up in the middle of Hong Kong, and he's just wailing, like once a year. And any tourist that walks by is like, what the hell is that? And then he's like, that's the Wailing Man.
It's a tradition that goes back 1,000 years.
And people are like, what the hell is that? It's like, don't worry, it's the Wailing Man. And you pick who the Wailing Man is via, like, a lottery, you know? And he has to wail all day, you know, or something bad happens to him, you know?
Yeah, it's a great honor.
It's a great honor to be the Wailing Man. You give your family a lot of pride to be the Wailing Man. It's kind of like the draft, you know? Oh, maybe it's like people want to be the Wailing Man.
Yeah, it's like absolutely they would.
You know, so it's not a lottery. I mean, it is a lottery, but it's like people are like trying to like win the title of the Wailing Man. And then they'll have like judges, not judges, but like, you know, it would be like their version of the Thanksgiving Day Parade, right?
Right.
So like Thanksgiving Day Parade, day after Thanksgiving or during Thanksgiving or whatever the fuck it is. You know, like you ate dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, and then you're watching the Macy's thing. It's like the day after Thanksgiving. And there's all these floats, and there's announcers. And, like, you're just doing it because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And people are watching it, and it's, like, a national tradition. And the announcers are like, oh, this year they had a really good Snoopy float. With the Wailing Man, it's, like, the same thing. It's, like, a day after a holiday, like Halloween. And no one has anything else to do. So this man just wails. And they have, like, a crew there just filming him all day. And they're like, this Wailing Man is much better than last year's. Like, notice how he screams or whatever, you know?
He sounds like he's in much more pain.
Exactly.
And then they, like, have a list of, like, this is my favorite Wailing Man, you know? BuzzFeed has a list of all the best Wailing Mans throughout the years, you know, stuff like that. But I think my voice would die in, like, an hour, but... That could be part of the thing, though. Like, however long you can wail, that's more honorable, you know?
Maybe he just goes until he can't, and then at that point, the festival's over. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, yeah. The longer you can wail, the longer the festival. So, like, if you're, like, the best wailing man, you say, like, oh, this festival was 8 hours. It was so awesome because the wailing man wailed for a whole 8 hours. Whereas, like, next year, like, maybe a wailing man only got, like, an hour into it. And they're like, oh, we had to call it off early. Like, we didn't even do the dragon float, you know? They didn't even do the, I don't know, there's a festival going on, all the fun things. Like, they didn't get time to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great idea. In my version of Hong Kong and fantasy Hong Kong, that would definitely be a real festival.
That would definitely be a thing. Back to the trivia question. I'm sorry I got sidetracked of the wailing man. I'm going to use my Google, my 5 second Google.
Okay.
Can you spell it again really quick? I'm going to just remember it and then I'll Google that.
Exactly. L-U-E. Y-A-N.
L-U-E, two words?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
All right, ready?
And it's a festival, right?
Yep.
Okay, got it.
Ready? 3, 2, 1. Google.
Boom. Okay.
What do you got?
Shit. So the first... Oh, okay. I see four down on Wikipedia says the Ghost Festival, also known as the Hungry Ghost Festival. And I think that was one of the things, Festival of the Hungry Ghosts, right?
Yep.
All right. Festival of the Hungry Ghosts, final answer.
That is correct.
I'm so sad it's not the Wailing Man Festival.
God, that festival sounds so cool.
I had another idea for the Wailing Man Festival. Okay, so, like, you know how on New Year's Day we drop the ball?
You drop the man.
Yeah. You drop the man, and he wails the whole way down. Hang like, on. You don't drop him, but, like...
Maybe, okay. So they call it dropping the wailing man, but really, you're lowering him real slow.
Yeah, because you don't want him to die. And he's, like, wailing the whole way down. And the cool thing about it is, like, the sound kind of changes as he gets lower. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it gets louder. I don't know. It's a cool idea. You could do it, like, at night. Like, it could do it at, like, at dawn. You know what I mean? And so that's, like, Mark's... When he reaches the bottom, the festival begins. You know? And then he wails however long he can wail for, and then it's over.
But they definitely drop him.
Oh, yeah. They drop him really slowly. In the beginning of the day. And then when he hits the bottom, festival truly begins... And then he wails for however many hours he can wail.
Yeah.
And then that's the whole festival. I don't know what you do at this festival outside of listening to a man wail, but, you know.
Well, you know, so everybody gathers at dawn. You watch him drop. And when he hits the bottom, everybody cheers.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, yeah, we did it another year. We
have fireworks. Like, they go off when he hits the bottom.
You know what I mean? There has to be some way that people that attend this can participate with the man.
With the wailing man.
There has to be something that you do. Like,
I was thinking you could give, like, an interactive music segment, but, like, you play, like, in with the wailing man. You know what I mean? You try to use his wail as, like, part of some music. So, like, you play, like, drums or something, and okay. He's wailing the whole time, and so you're, like, creating some kind of weird rhythmic thing. I don't know. That's the first thought I had.
It could be like a really big drum circle.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that didn't get picked to be the wailing man, they each get a drum.
Oh, well, then, not everybody, but like the like top, you know, 50 or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
So they all circle the man and they all have to play for as long as he wails or whatever.
He wails for
and then yeah, everybody else like maybe screams with him. I don't know.
You don't want to scream as loud, though, because you'll get kicked out. Because you got to hear the wailing man all the time. That's part of the festival, you know? He's got to be continuous wailing.
He's the star of the show.
He's the star. He's got, like, a spotlight on him. I'm imagining this could go till night, like, if he wails long enough. And they'd want to choose a day where it's, like, a full moon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'd be, like, the first full moon in November or something. Would be the Festival of the Wailing Man.
And if he makes it till the moon comes out, that's seen as a good omen.
Yeah, for the next year.
That's good luck.
Like, we're going to have a good winter this year because the Wailing Man lasted all the way. It's kind of like Groundhog Day. You know, it's like, oh. And then if he doesn't last, then it means we're in for a bad winter.
Yeah. That's such a good idea. Like, every hour he finishes at could mean a different thing.
Oh, and some guy could write, like, a book about, like, what all they mean. Like, if the Wailing Man ends at 4 p.m.,
yeah,
the next year is the year of blah, blah, blah. And it means this and this and this and this.
It's very astrology. I Ching-like.
Yeah, it's like astrology, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. Man, I'm sad this doesn't exist in reality.
We should start it. This is our calling.
Making the Festival of the Wailing Man. But it can't be in Hong Kong because they would never let us do that in Hong Kong. We could do it in middle America, like Iowa or something. You know? In like a field or something like that. You know, one of us would have to be the Wailing Man.
The initial one,
In the first festival. I don't know if I could do it.
That's a lot of pressure.
It is.
I'm not good at screaming. Like,
me neither.
It's not something I ever do.
Maybe we can get like a metal singer to do it. You know, like a heavy metal singer to like scream.
That would be a lot better, probably. We could
then
be,
he could,
yeah, we could be the drum people.
Yes, for the first year. Yeah. So what I'm imagining with the Wailing Man, and I don't know why this came to my head, but I'm imagining him being like naked.
Me too.
Okay, it wasn't just me.
I mean, why wouldn't he be? It's the only thing that makes sense.
I'm glad you're on the same page. I mean, maybe he can have a loincloth, but, like, he's naked everywhere else, you know? Yeah. It's almost like he's getting tortured. But he's not. It's an honor. It's an honor to be the Wailing Man. I promise. It's an honor. yeah, we'll make this in, like, Iowa. Festival of the Wailing Man. It'll be like Burning Man, but not expensive. Like, anyone can come. It's free.
Dude, this would attract the Burning Man crowd. Like, it would be gangbusters. You can sell an album of afterwards for anyone who wants that. Like,
sell shirts, Wailing Man shirts. Oh, an album of the Wailing Man's wails.
Yeah.
Like, and then, like, music people would be like, oh, 2015's Wailing Man. Ooh, that was the best year.
Let me put on that record real quick. And like, then it's just...
Let me put that one on. Then they analyze, like, individual years. Like, you can tell this guy had a much deeper baritone than the previous year or whatever. I had a funny news story I found. This has nothing to do with the Wailing Man, but it's equally dumb. I had a funny news story I found over the week, today actually. It's about text messages and scientific studies. I don't know if you read this. You read the title, but I'll read the title. It's Text Messages Sent by Roaming Eagles Bankrupt Scientific Survey. So apparently what they were doing in Russia, it looks like. Russian researchers were really interested in these eagles, this endangered species of eagle in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to figure out their, like, flight patterns, they... I don't know why they used the phones, but they did. They used phones and attached them to a few eagles and let them fly off. And what would happen is the eagles... phones, there would be an app that automatically sent out a text message to the scientists of, like, their location. Like, I'm here, blah, 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 blah. And the scientists would collect this data, and they'd be able to mark the flight paths of the eagles, right? I have no idea why they used phones and didn't just use GPS, but...
Do you want to know something really funny?
What?
There wasn't a special app. They just used Google Maps.
They probably just did. I mean, you're probably right. I think it sounds like this is a very cheapo survey. Like, they didn't have the technology to have real GPS, so they used really cheap phones to use Google Maps to send apps or to send text messages with the location. But what ended up happening was there was a lot of places that the birds flew that didn't have any coverage, so they couldn't send any text messages. But the app was still running. and Google Maps or whatever was still running in the background trying to send text messages with their location, and it wouldn't be able to. So what would happen was they would have all these accumulated text messages that wouldn't get sent. And when the Eagle flies into a country or a place that had data all of a sudden, then it would fire off all these text messages all at the same time, like once in, like all in a row. Mm-hmm. And if the scientists were lucky, the Eagle would fly into a country that had cheap texting. If they were unlucky, they would fly into a country like Iran that has increasingly crazy roaming charges and get charged 77 cents per text messages. And they had like 1,000 text messages saved up in their phones. So like one Eagle flew into Iran and sent like 2,000 text messages at 77 cents each, and it like bankrupted the entire study like immediately.
That's hilarious.
And like, I don't know. First of all, how do you not realize that this isn't going to go awry? Like, you got birds using phones, flying around countries that don't have surface. You know, like, it doesn't make sense to me. But, I don't know, I just thought it was a really funny story that people use technology in really dumb ways.
Yeah, but I mean, that's totally what... Do you know what happened? The scientists did not hire, like, a tech consultant.
Oh,
To like brief them on this. They just got somebody's nephew and was like, hey,
can you rig an Eagle texting device?
We have a little harness. Like, just tell us what to do with the phone.
And we'll just go from there. And he's like, all right, here you go. And I don't know if this is the greatest idea. They're like, that's fine. Goodbye. Thank you.
Little nephew was like, okay, I'll open up Google Maps and
I'll make it work. And then they're like, great, this is awesome. And then, you know, a month later, they're like, oh, I have a phone bill for $6,000 or whatever.
Bunch of texts that say, turn right at Mississippi Boulevard.
I just thought it was an amusing story. So what they're doing is they went to, like, I don't remember, some crowdsourcing website to try to raise money to cover their phone bill, basically. I don't know if they successfully did it, but they're trying. They're going to keep going. Like, they want to keep doing this using the same technology. So, like, they're not stopping. They're like, no, we're going to keep going. We just need more money to cover the phone bill.
Yeah.
So maybe this was all in their plan. Like, maybe they knew this would get a lot of attention because it's so ridiculous and people would start donating to their service, their thing. I don't know.
That's my, it's kind of like taking out a loan, you know?
Yeah. A really bad idea for a loan. Yeah. But still one. I don't know. I thought it was really stupid.
This wasn't the study that I read. There was a different study on some different birds where there were poachers that figured out that these birds had phones on them. And they would shoot the birds and take the phone and use the phone.
They would steal the phone, essentially.
And then they would that would just be their cell phone. So, like, the scientists would get back these logs of texts that are like, hey, sister, how you doing?
I just shot another bird.
Imagine getting that as a scientist. Like, the Eagle isn't like, saying this.
Like, what the fuck is this? Hey, sister, this is my new number. I just shot a bird.
Oh. Your free cell phone.
Where was this? Where did this take place?
I don't remember. This was a while ago.
Was it America?
No, I think it was somewhere in Africa.
That's amazing. See, that's like, I don't feel like people don't think about these things. You'd think scientists, of all people, would consider the, like, ramifications of these kind of studies. Like, you know, if we put cell phones on birds, maybe something bad's going to happen with those things. You know what I mean? Like,
what if someone gets one of those
phones? I would think this through. Like, it's not that hard to think about these things, but... I think they're just so excited to attach cell phones to birds that they're like, I don't care. I don't care about the consequences. Let's just do it, you know? I still don't understand why they don't just do, like, GPS tracking. Because, like, we have the technology to do that. Maybe it's too expensive. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like if they couldn't pay a $1,000 phone bill, they didn't have a lot of money to work with.
That's true. So, they probably all bought, like, the $50, like, burner phones.
Yeah.
Got one of their nephews and then sent them off.
You know? They probably went to the T-Mobile store, signed a contract for like 5 years, and they got a free phone, right?
And everyone in the study did it. Like, they're like, we all need you to sign a 5-year contract to get the free phone, because we need at least a dozen phones for every Eagle.
Yeah. You know? And I like, bet okay. They did a family plan.
They probably did. Like, unlimited texting. But that doesn't help you when you're in Iran and they have roaming 77 cents
yeah.
a text message.
God, dude, that's exactly what they did. You know, they just went to a T-Mobile store, got 12 phones under a family plan, put Google Maps on them, and just sent them off on an Eagle. Like, that's science.
If that's science, then I could be a scientist right now.
This is a terrible idea.
It is a terrible. Like, did no one in the group was like, "Why? What are we doing here? Like, this is dumb." Couldn't they just like put like tags on them or something, and like wrote down where they see the eagle? Or I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a better way to do this. It's fine. You know, this makes for an entertaining story, though.
Yeah.
So, do you want to do the last trivia? Is it Halloween themed as well?
Yes, we have another Halloween trivia question.
I'm excited.
All right, your final Halloween trivia question is, I'll tell you, it's about movies.
Okay, I'm going to use my Monty Hall on this one. Right. Monty Hall.
Question is, John Carpenter's Halloween was made in how many days?
Ooh, I actually don't know the answer to this. I like that movie a lot, though. But go ahead.
Is it A, 7, B, 14, C, 21, or D, 28 days?
That's really short. That's really short. Shooting it, I'm assuming, right? Shooting the movie.
I think this might be made, like, composed all the music.
No way. No,
composed all the music, edited it. I think.
Really?
I think so.
Oh my
God. Let's check after the question, because I know this was made in a ridiculously short period of time. Like, any of
That's
these answers
insane. Is... You know, John Carpenter composes all his music, too.
Yeah.
He's kind of a crazy master genius person.
Yeah.
He's like the Leonardo da Vinci of our time. Yeah. I know that's probably a bad analogy, but I don't know. He's really talented. Okay, I'm going to use Monty Hall. See, okay, when you said 7 days, I was like, oh, he could shoot a movie in 7 days. Like, it'd be really hard, but you could do that.
It's been done.
But now that you say it could be the whole thing, I'm kind of leaning to 28. Like, give me the maximum amount, because that's a really short timeline still.
Yeah.
But I'll Monty Hall, and I'm going to lock in 7, because I don't think it's 7. I think it's too short.
It's either 7 or 21.
Okay. If it's going to be 7, I just can feel it. No, it can't be 7. 7 is too short. 21, final answer.
21 is correct.
Yes. So it probably was made then. That's crazy that he did that in 21 days. The crew did that in 21 days. That's like a pretty elaborate movie, too. I mean, it's not that elaborate, but like, it's got stuff, you know?
Yeah, made a crazy amount of money. Like, just composing a score, shooting a movie, editing it, and just, it's done. Like, we finished.
21 days. We're done. And the score is really good.
Yeah, it's iconic. Everybody knows that song.
That movie made, like, it was shot for a very small budget, and it made, like, 100 times its budget. Like, it was insane. It was, like, one of the top 10 most profitable movies ever, like in terms of profit versus cost it, you know, took to make or whatever. So
yeah,
it's just insane.
That was the first horror movie to do that, right? Where some really talented people got together with like $10,000, made a movie, and it just made like $100 million.
Yeah. I think it was definitely one of the first ones. Like, it really set the precedent of like, hey, horror movies are really cheap to make. And they can make a shit ton of money if you do them right. And, like, once they did that, other people were like, okay, let's try to do this, too, you know?
Yeah, because, like, Blair Witch, Paranormal Activity.
Like, yeah, they're all in the same vein of, like, these are really cheap to make, and they can make a crap ton of money if they're done right kind of thing. So, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Want to do a Reddit?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
This let's was... I don't like his username. I'm not going to say it. But
okay.
He asks, door-to-door salesman, do you prefer having your sales pitch stopped immediately?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I would always wonder this too, because... Okay, what do you do, first of all? When someone comes to your door and they're clearly selling something, do you hear them and you're like, oh, they're a salesman, and then you're just like, no thanks, immediately, and slam the door? Or do you kind of give them a little bit of time and, like, pretend you care a little and then be like, no thanks, and then close the door?
It depends on my mood.
Me too, it does. What do you normally do, though? What's your general?
If I'm feeling nice, you'll hear a little bit.
You'll pretend to listen, yeah.
Yeah. Because for some reason, I have this idea that they care about what they're selling. They probably don't. Like, they're getting paid. This is their job. Like, they don't care, but...
Yeah.
We're probably wasting their time when they could be selling it to someone that actually wants to buy.
Do you probably think
something.
They would prefer to you just be like, no, I don't care, and close the door so they can get onto the next house faster?
Yeah, I mean, if it were my job, like, thinking about it critically like this, I would prefer to spend my time with people that want to buy things.
I feel bad then, because once I, like, pretended to be interested, insofar that I, like, walked outside with the guy and we were, like, looking at the windows because he was selling window replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, it was like 10 minutes because I felt bad. And yeah. I was like kind of interested, but not really. I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. But like, let me just see what he has to say. And he gave me like his card and he was like, call me back at this time and we'll set up a thing. And I'm like, okay, I will.
And I never did. You're out there with them. You're like, yeah, I guess my windows are, yeah, you know, they're looking a little rough, but I'm not going to replace them.
I felt bad, though, because he was really nice, and he, like, had a good pitch. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really know a lot about windows, so I'll, like, hear what he has to say. And then I just got, you know, I got wrapped up in the whole thing, and he was giving me his business card, and I was like, okay, I'll call you. You know, I got to discuss it with the wife first, but I'll call you. I'll give you a ring.
Never going to call her.
Never happened.
You threw away his card instantly.
Yeah, but I wasted like 10 minutes of that guy's time. Like, I feel bad, you know? But yeah. What are you going to do?
I'd be curious if that works on anybody. Like, does this work? Cold calls and like people just immediately coming.
Oh, yeah.
Does it?
If it didn't work, they wouldn't be doing it.
I don't know.
Yeah, they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work. I mean, I don't think it works on a lot of people. If they can go to 50 houses and get, like, one person to sign up, it's probably worth it. Because it's so expensive, whatever they're selling.
Yeah, I mean, that just means you're not getting a good deal whenever you encounter this kind of person.
Right, right. But, like, yeah, if they can go to 50 houses and sell one thing, then they probably are good. Because it doesn't take long to do 50 houses. I mean, probably not. Like, especially if everyone's slamming their door immediately.
True.
You know, if everyone's like me and like give them 10 minutes, yeah, it's gonna take a while. But if everyone's like, nope, I don't want that, nope, 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 and you get the one grandma that's like, yeah, I do need window treatment, and they're like, okay, here you go, and they're like, all right, you know, $2,000 or whatever it is,
that'll be $1,000,000.
Yeah, and like, it's probably worth it for that. But yeah, I don't know who falls for that. Not me. But I do feel bad. Like, it's the same thing I do with, like, homeless people, like, that ask me for money.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, give them the time of the day, but I'll, like, make an excuse. Like, instead of ignoring them, which is what I should do, I should just be, like, not gonna say anything. But, like, they'll be like, do you have any money? And I'll be like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I spent my last thing on blah, 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 and I don't have any money. Sorry. Have a good day. Like, I'll, like, go out of my way to, like, justify why I'm not giving them anything, which is really stupid, and it probably wastes their time. But I feel bad. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's probably dangerous for you.
It probably is. What you really should just do is ignore and keep walking. But I don't know. I feel bad about it.
Same.
For some reason. Which is really dumb. And like, I feel like it's more dangerous to engage them because, this is going to sound terrible, but I don't care. It's fine. It's the end of the show. No one's listening this far. But like, if you engage a homeless person and it's like, or like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, they have more ammunition to be like, what the hell? You know, like, how come you don't, you know, like, they can antagonize you at that point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas if you ignore them, they can say, like, hey, don't ignore me, but, like, they don't really have any reason to antagonize you because everyone's ignoring them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, it is more dangerous.
It's like, as soon as you interact with them, you've entered the game. And,
and there's no leaving the game. They're on your shit list now. What I don't understand about homeless people, and maybe this is just me, this is going to sound terrible again. Like, why as a homeless person do some homeless people like, say fuck off when you don't give them money. You know what I mean? Like, especially to people that, like, work downtown. Like, if I work downtown and I walk by a homeless person, and they're probably the same person every day, or, you know, familiar, and I don't give them money, and they're like, fuck you, or whatever. Yeah. They do that.
They do.
Like, why would you do that? Because now the person you just said fuck you to is going to remember, like, oh, I'm never giving them money. You know, they said, they told me to fuck off, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a stupid strategy. If you want money, you should be like, oh, don't worry about it. Maybe next time, you know? Leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we should, maybe they should just learn better ways to beg. I don't know.
I mean,
I've told this story on the show before, but I want to tell it again because it's really funny.
All
right. One time, only once in my life, I had the idea that I was going to do something nice for a homeless man. I was going into Publix. I saw a homeless man on my left. I was like, when I'm in Publix, I'm going to buy this guy.
I'm going to get him a sub.
I'm going to get him a sub, and I'm going to get him a water and some packets of mayonnaise and mustard in case he likes that.
Sure.
I got all that stuff. I went outside, and I'm walking up to the homeless man with the sub and the water, and I just kept walking. Because I got really nervous.
You're like, your brain is like, this is a terrible idea. Mission abort. Mission abort.
What if this guy stabs me? What if he doesn't? What if he hates turkey?
What if he's like, turkey? I wanted roast beef. Like, you don't know. He could be very violent.
Yeah. All that was going through my head. And I was just like, it isn't worth it. I'm just going to eat this sandwich.
You had an extra turkey sandwich at that point.
Yeah.
My brain does this a lot, like the mission abort thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any control over it. And I don't know if you're the same way. It doesn't have to be, like, as scary of a situation as the homeless person. But, like, I'll be walking to something. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I'll be walking to do something. And, like, I'm almost there. And my brain's like, nope, 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 abort. And I'll just walk by. And I'll be like, after walking by, I'll be like, oh my God, I just didn't do that. And I really needed to do it. Like, I really wanted to do it, but I didn't do it or whatever. And I don't know. I have no control over when my brain tells me to abort a mission. You know, it's just like, okay. I think it's like a flight or fight thing. It's just like, nope, this isn't happening.
It's like, I don't know. I just get anxious and I imagine the worst stuff that could possibly happen.
Right. Like, in the moment before you do it, your brain is like, here's the worst thing that could happen if you do this. And you're like, okay. Not doing that That's anymore. Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the homeless person could grab you by the collar and be like, I don't want turkey, and like punch you. Like, he could. It's possible.
Yeah.
It was nice of you to try to do a good gesture.
I felt good about it.
You, even though you didn't give it to
I felt good the rest of the day. I was like, I'm such a nice guy.
My intentions were good. Do you ever have like thoughts? It's weird because, like, nice people are a unique bunch because they can, like, do these things without feeling anxious about it. Like, I feel like the soul of my person is, like, a nice, caring individual, but outwardly I'm not because I get nervous before I do nice things for people.
Yeah.
Like, so sometimes I'll have a thought and I'll notice someone's having a bad day or something, and I'll be like, I should do something nice. And then I'll, like, think about, like, the nice things I could do. Like, maybe I'll buy him, like, you know, a sandwich at the shop or a pastry or something, you know, and, like, give it to him or something, you know, some nice gesture, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'll even go so far to, like, buy it. And then I'll, like, walk over there and I'll be like, no, this is going to come across really weird, isn't it? Yes, it is. Something terrible could happen if you go for this. And then you, like, back out at the last minute. And, like, normal nice people just do it because they want to be nice. But, like, my intention's good. I just don't follow through because I'm like you said, like, you have anxiety about, you know, what could go wrong or whatever.
Yeah. That seeing someone having a bad day thing just resonates very powerful with me because I'll see someone having a bad day and I want to say something nice to them because I see that they're having a bad day.
Right, and you're trying to think of something nice.
But you know? If I say something nice to them because they're having a bad day, like, that's kind of me saying to them, I see that you're weak.
You're having a bad day.
I don't want them to feel that. Like,
and then they could interpret that as, like, they're just being nice to me because I'm clearly being in a bad mood or whatever. And you don't want that, you know?
I don't know, because when I'm in a bad mood and someone does something nice to me, I'm like, I'm not actually in a bad mood. How did you know? I was trying to conceal it.
I was just pretending to be in a bad mood. Yeah, no. It's...
Yeah, it's like you're about to cry, and you're like, I'm not crying, you're crying.
You're crying.
Screw you.
I don't even want this chocolate bar that you gave me. Go away. Yeah, but I think I'm like that, similar to you, where I have good intentions. I want to be nice, but then I'm like, no, it's too risky. It's too risky to be nice, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've learned from, you know, being alive, which is a sad fact, like, being nice to somebody, it is a generally bad idea in a lot of situations. Like,
usually.
Shit can go wrong. Like, the outcomes of being nice to someone, or doing a nice gesture, or, like, doing the right thing, like, the ramifications of that could be much worse than the positive outcomes. You know what I mean? Like it probably wouldn't be that bad, but like it could go really bad. Yeah. Like the net loss is much higher than like the net possible loss is much higher than the net possible gain.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
I mean, you never know when you're going to hit that risk lottery and the worst, the homeless man is going to chase you because he hates turkey.
Because he hates turkey and he kills you over a turkey sandwich, you know, and you're just trying to be nice. So it's like, part of me is just like, I don't want to risk it. But like, I want to be nice. I don't know how to do it. I'm too anxious. I think part of it is I'm bad at reading people. Like if you could read people better, you could read that the homeless person is not violent. And you'd be like, they're going to react fine to the sandwich, you know? And if I could read the person that's having a bad day, I could be like, oh, they're going to react fine to this offering.
I don't know, man. But homeless people are really hard to read. That's true.
They're top tier hard to read. Yeah. No, you're right. They are different.
You never know when that keg is going to blow.
You never know when they're going to kill you over that turkey sandwich. Who's our sponsor today, Batsnacks?
Our sponsor today is... The Festival of the Wailing Man.
When you're looking to have a great time at the beginning of fall, choose the Festival of the Wailing Man. Good fun for the whole family. Remember when you're feeling kind of groovy. I feel like I do this one all the time.
Go and see a movie.
Always. Yeah. Good night, everyone. Drive safely. Bye.